A Shea 106 special.
What do you listen to?
Yes, what I listen to is often just what happens to be on the radio and in the car or anywhere else. So it's something to switch on noise.
The voice is Peter Gabriel, speaking to us from a New York studio where he was editing tapes for a future King Biscuit Flower Hour program. New York figures prominently in The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway, the last album and tour by the group Genesis, in which founding member Gabriel participated. New York has many radio stations. Power, I'm proud to be loud, my signal goes out clear. I want everybody to know that Mozo is here.
Most of that song was written at the time, or before the first album.
Really?
Yeah, a demo of it, which was a gospel track for the first album. It actually comes from a story called Mozo, which may or may not see the light of day, but refers to an alienated character who was able to act out his fantasies on
a story that you've written.
Radio, yeah.
What's the name of that again?
Mozo, M-O-Z-O, and a few songs from both albums refer to that.
Have you published any fiction?
No, I haven't. I don't think I'm a good enough prose writer at this point.
I think a lot of people look forward to reading it, though.
Well, maybe at some time.
Do you write with a piano? How do you compose?
Often I get ideas on the piano, or else, you know, I'll start humming things and then take it to the piano. Sometimes words will come up so simultaneously, and often I have a notebook which I refer to, which I'll sort of look at and see if the subjects that I've jotted down, what might be appropriate. And if there's anything there, I'll sort of take those ideas and then start playing with them. The first stage is when I get an idea, often the quickest. And I really enjoy that. That's the exciting part. Then,
sort of the creative flash.
Right. Then comes the thing when I've got the idea for the music and I've probably got the idea for the words. And I've got to tie down the melody and tie down the lyrics and so on. And the form of the song, and that often takes a long time. Lots of hard work, that's where I need the discipline.
How does it relate to trying to write for a larger musical edifice, as it were? Do you feel more confident with the works you're turning out because you don't have to have them justified to a larger group, or is it...
But in Genesis, you mean?
Yes.
I would like to use other people's opinions to bounce off all the time. I still need that.
Would you say your input to the Genesis sound, for example, was more lyrical than musical?
I don't think so, actually. No, I think Tony, Mike, and myself were largely responsible for the style of the music, and the lyrics were almost like a separate area.
But he forced a smile even though his hopes they dashed where offerings fell. Where they fell.
The band of songwriters was called the Garden Wall in 1966 at the Charterhouse School in Surrey, and consisted of Anthony Phillips on guitars, Tony Banks on keyboards, and Peter Gabriel on percussion and vocals. Michael Rutherford joined soon thereafter, adding his then-limited guitar work. A demo heard by Jonathan King landed them a Decca recording contract, and by 1968 they had an album and two singles. Somewhere the name Genesis appeared, but the group found out that an American band already was using the name, so they changed it to Revelation, and found that that was taken too. The first album, an overproduced, under-talented attempt at pop acceptability, was therefore called From Genesis to Revelation and quickly sank into its well-deserved obscurity.
Back in Charterhouse. Did you see that going the direction Genesis went to, say, climaxing with the Lamb Tour, that kind of musical form? Was that what you were seeing, or was it just songwriters hoping to sell a few tunes and get out of school?
Initially probably the songwriters, but since after the Black Album, when we went, we left Jonathan King and Decca, we definitely began sort of extending our ambitions towards
the night.
It wasn't until 1969 that the band made their first public appearance, under the finally acceptable name Genesis, and after a slew of drummers, they went into the studio with John Mayhew to record what they consider their first real album for Charisma. The album was called Trespass, featuring the first of a series of covers that Paul Whitehead would do for them, and among other musical highlights, the classic The Knife, which would remain in their live performance repertoire for many years to come. The Genesis sound had taken shape and would be seen to survive extensive personnel changes, supporting the idea that it was Banks, Rutherford, and Gabriel that formed the core of the group. Drummer John Mayhew left the band, and Anthony Phillips, before the first album was even released. Phillips seemed like a great loss, considering his growing 12-string sophistication. Phil Collins, then working in a moderately successful club band called Flaming Youth, answered an advert in Melody Maker and found himself in the band. They toured in 1970 with a guitarist named Mick Barnard, but ended up finding Steve Hackett from his own ad in Melody Maker. Genesis had reached an important evolutionary stage.
Do you regret not making the decision that Anthony Phillips made back in the late 60s, I guess it was, when he decided to teach and study? Did you look at him and envy his decision within the context of the group such that you then made that decision later? How did you feel when Phil came into the group, knowing that he was, you know, a featured singer with Flaming Youth beforehand and a percussionist? It seems to me that before Phil, you were the only consistent percussion element in Genesis, with, you know, even only your bass drum and your tambourine. You were still a driving force from that perspective, or was that a role that you didn't really choose for yourself?
No, I used to enjoy it a lot. You know, I mean, I started off being a drummer, not a singer.
Ah.
The track he's referring to, More Fool Me, from the album Selling England by the Pound.
Well, I think you knew you'd not be back. Well, at least it would seem that way, because you never said goodbye.
Steve Hackett was the first to release a solo effort, Voyage of the Acolyte, while still with the group in 1975, followed by his recent successful LP, Please Don't Touch, which clearly presents his growth away from the Genesis sound.
There are many things that I would rather do. Many, many places I would rather be.
Phillips, after having done some limited session work, came back to the studio with Michael Rutherford and produced The Geese and the Ghost, an astoundingly beautiful collection of acoustical masterpieces, which he followed up this year with Wise After the Event, a somewhat less powerful but melodically captivating album. Phil Collins has ventured out of the ranks for various exploits, the most notable being his stint with Brand X, a progressive jazz rock band featuring John Goodsell on guitar.
Have you done any more work with any of the ex-members of Genesis?
No, I haven't. I've seen Ant a few times. Steve bumped into a couple of times with Ant.
It's not an amicable relationship you still have with him, or is it?
Yeah, that's fine.
How about the Brand X kind of musical form? Are you attracted at all to what Phil was involved in for a while?
Some of that I can get into, but not so much as
haven't found yourself particularly drawn towards New Wave or...
I like about that a lot. You know, I think in some of the more established bands, they set themselves up in patterns or styles with which they are linked in the minds and ears of the audience, and they're a little bit cautious of moving away from that. And some of the newer acts are more progressive in the real meaning of the word.
The major albums by Genesis with Peter Gabriel begin with Nursery Crime, where the Gabriel stage presence can really be felt on tunes like The Musical Box and The Fountain of Salmasis. Foxtrot had the smash show opener Watcher of the Skies, where Gabriel appears first as just black light illuminated eyes and batwing headgear, and builds to balletic flourishes of the multicolored lining of his black cape. Side 2 consisted of the truly epic Supper's Ready, a multi-layered piece with symphonic sweep, whose lyrics enigmatically revolved around the apocalypse of John, and whose stage performance was unequaled in their repertoire.
Said though that the major works were driven by your lyrical, the energy in your lyrics. Supper's Ready, Lamb Lies Down.
Well, certainly those two were definitely much of my lyrical areas. And I think almost with Genesis, the priorities were arrangements, melodies, and lyrics in that order. Which is not necessarily my own, it isn't my own priorities, but I think stylistically,
would you say the group is carrying on now with utilizing elements that you have injected into it through time and exploiting them, as it were?
Selling England by the Pound, with superior production by John Burns, brought the group as close to superstardom as they had ever been, and deservedly so, with such masterworks as I Know What I Like in Your Wardrobe and The Cinema Show. Perhaps this was the band's cohesive climax. Touring with this album was their most successful to date. What followed was the largest project the group had ever undertaken, an ambitious multimedia stage presentation and double concept album conceived and scripted by Gabriel and relying on his ever-present endless array of props and costumes, backdropped by slides and other special effects. What's more, Gabriel had already decided to leave the band when they took to the road to present this spectacle. Reactions to the tour were mixed. Peter's lyrics were consistently enigmatic and fraught with symbolic content that most could not catch, but none could deny the massive scope of the work, the overall satisfaction that it left in its wake.
How did you come by the name of Rail for the Lamb Show?
Well, I was trying to get something that didn't sound particularly as if it belonged to one race or another, which is quite hard to do when you think about it. And the El Ra being the sun, and Rail and Beyond the obvious plays on words, I thought it was what I could do.
And it also happens to sound surprisingly like the last syllable of your name. How was that last tour, the tour you did when you knew you were leaving?
Some of it was good, the early part, but the last few gigs in Europe were fairly depressing because I had agreed then not to say anything about my departure, and I felt a little dishonest with the audience that I was, having made that commitment to the band, unable to say what I was feeling and why I was feeling.
Did you find that a difficult tour? You had such an incredibly complex stage show to work with. Was that an aid to your decision now to really simplify your stage show, that kind of...
Oh, no. I mean, my decision now is based on the fact that I want to start doing something new based on music. And, I enjoy what we were doing then, I think, in the terms of combining music with telling stories.
What were some of your options when you made the decision to go alone? Were you prepared then with songs and you just waited before you went into a studio with them, or were you really in a turmoil at that time?
No, it was sort of a couple of years before I resurfaced. When I left initially, I didn't want to go back performing, and I didn't think I would carry on the business for a while. I thought that I would carry on writing.
The first album demonstrated just what kind of changes in direction could be wrought in a set of musicians and a new attitude. Robert Fripp and Larry Fast emerged as important musical friends, Fripp famed for his extended King Crimson project and his work with Brian Eno, and Larry Fast the emergent synthesizer master best known for his Synergy albums. Most surprising was his choice of a producer.
What made you go with Bob Ezrin, which seemed a fairly radical choice given your background, to go with the producer of Kiss and Alice Cooper and that strain of music?
Well, he wasn't particularly in love with my back catalogue, nor I with his. But when we met, I talked to a lot of people. He seemed the most interested in and the most imaginative in certain areas, and I was looking also for someone who could cover what I thought might be my own weaknesses in arrangement. Although I knew what I was doing in terms of writing and performance, I wasn't confident on the arrangements.
This song comes from a collection of re-recorded Beatles tunes, starring a host of big-name talents, used as the soundtrack for a feature-length film of Second World War footage called All This and World War II.
Let me take you down, 'cause I'm going to Strawberry Fields. Nothing is real, and nothing to get hung about. Strawberry Fields Forever.
Have you done much more session work like the Strawberry Fields Forever on World War II soundtrack?
No, I haven't. And I quite enjoyed
excellent.
Oh. Yes, I never saw the film, actually. I would like to... No, I don't get asked to do that much. I had one session a long time ago where I played flute on the Cat Stevens record.
Really?
And not being the world's greatest flute player, I haven't been asked back.
Do you feel you're part of a music scene in England, or are you an isolated musical element there?
I don't feel particularly tied up with either sort of the older generation of bands from which I came, or with the newer. I'd like to find myself a separate place in the wings that I can work away. I think in a few years' time, the thing that will most date today's records will be the drum kit.
Yes.
And I'm sort of vaguely toying with the idea of trying an album without a kit of drums. But won't be the next one, but maybe the one after. I don't know. I mean, a lot of other ways, obviously, of generating rhythmic sounds.
Like Kraftwerk's electronic drums?
Yeah, that's one thing. Although I think you can do it and still sound very human. You know, there's a mechanical approach and there's sort of a human approach. My own taste, I suppose, is both extremes, you know, such as on exposure, when you have what's very sort of cold guitar loops, creating this huge sort of icy backdrop.
Yes.
I wanted to put on the recorders on the top of that, so you had this sort of fairly warm, innocent sounding instrument against this huge metal landscape.
I felt in the first album, specifically, you were touching on some of that really epic power in your music, specifically in Here Comes the Flood. You seem to be experimenting in many more forms and touching on a lot more musical bases, but I was wondering if you were ever going to work back towards that epic concept, the mythical power that you have command over, but you seem to be not concentrating on as much in your solo work.
Right. Well, I do enjoy that so much, but at the moment I'm more interested in sort of realistic things. And also, there was a difference, I think, between the two albums. And I was going particularly for a band sound on the second album, less of a sort of grand scale of things, like Flood and Dolce Vita.
Right.
A couple of tracks which I hope to be working with Larry on the next album, which I think will be exclusively voice and synthesizer.
Your second album really shows, well, I'm not sure if it's greater self-confidence or just the circumstances of the of your situation that caused you to use the various studios and the production of Robert Fripp.
Yeah, well, I think with the second album, I was looking for less of a role from the producer, more someone who would basically be able to advise and recognize good takes and maybe suggest procedural things, which was more of a musician perhaps than a regular producer. And Robert's experimental work I've been very interested in, so he seemed an interesting choice, and he sent me a cassette of some work he'd done with Darryl Horn and was, you know, very keen to do it, I think, so it seemed a good idea.
You hadn't known Robert before that, before these collaborations?
About 3-4 years before.
Are you considering further use of Robert's more experimental aspects? I mean, they've really only surfaced in your work in Exposure, in a really concrete form.
Right. Well, I enjoy that a lot. I think maybe the odd thing, but we're both quite easy to get along with on the surface and fairly determined, obstinate characters.
Adapted the Fribbentronics kind of sound to a stage performance. It seems to be perfectly suited to sort of live scat jamming. And do you do any of that on stage?
Well, actually, I think what we're probably going to do is use the exposure tape of the guitar loops, which Robert used on that track.
Excellent.
But as yet, we were preparing to do it 2 gigs back, and the tapes were stolen.
Oh.
We were going to do it, so we're waiting now to get another mix. But I think that's probably best, because the guitar sound is quite unique, sort of mood.
What kind of other instruments are you tackling on your albums?
Well, piano and synthesizer at the moment I'm very interested in. I think Larry Fastad is quite a master, certainly. I think he knows more about the production of sounds and synthesizers than any other player that I've come across. So I hope to pick up a few things from him.
So who have you got with you on the tour this time? Is it representative of the players on the album? So Robert couldn't come with you this time, Robert Fripp?
No, he's busy doing his own album at the moment. Or at least, he's got to go back on that. It was finished, but now he has to go back and redo it. The touring so far is, again, one exception being Germany, has been going really very well. I mean, I'm very excited about reactions this time, because I think it's the best band, and seemingly the audience is too at the moment.
Where would you say that Peter Gabriel is the most popular in the world right now?
France.
Ah. How are you presenting yourself this time?
It's a fairly simple approach, really. There's a few things in way of lights, but not much. It's not laden with spaceships.
I saw a recent photograph of you with very little hair on your head. Is that the way you're presenting yourself now? What does your hair mean for you? You've gone through a lot of hairstyles which have been always unique, always different, and I was wondering what that particular aspect of your physical presence meant to you.
Well, I think the entire history of the world is dependent on the appearance of people's hair. I'm intending to write a book to illustrate that fact. I think a lot of major wars have been won or lost according to the hairstyle adopted by the appropriate generals. Very important.
How does that apply to your early days with the interesting shave form in the middle of the forehead?
Well, that indicated a significant gap in the gray substances beneath.
And here the genesis of Gabriel is up to date, and where the group that he left behind seems to be floundering under the weight of its own immutable bulk, Peter Gabriel is floating free on a rising current of his own creation. Until the concert tonight, we shall let him leave us pondering only this one piece of advice.
Stranger Media. To find out more about the works of Jeff Green, go to strangermedia.com.